We've all seen the good cop, bad cop routine on the big screen. Detectives haul a suspect into the interrogation room and then grill him until they get a confession. But as it turns out, in real life, those police tactics may not produce the best results. New research from UBCO just published in Psychological Science suggests a suspect can actually be persuaded to believe he or she committed a crime. Steve Porter is behind the research. He's also a psychology professor at UBCO, and he joins us now on the line. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rebecca.
How can someone be persuaded to fess up to something they didn't actually do?
Well, traditionally, and this is going back hundreds, if not more, years, we've assumed that if somebody says, I did it in relation to a crime or other transgression, then they did it, unless they were tortured into saying that or they were deranged. But in the last few years, we've come to the realization that in some cases, people can, you know, otherwise normally functioning people can come to be psychologically manipulated into confessing to something that they didn't do and to believing that they actually did the crime.
So what's happening? I mean, what's happening in their brains that they would suddenly believe they've done something and even go ahead and say they had done it?
Right. So I think most people might assume that people who are falsely confessing do so because of the stress of police interrogations, and they just want to get out of there, or they do it, you know, to save somebody else's neck. But because of research on false memories over the last 20 years or so, we were wondering whether some of them actually came to believe it as a result of the way that police asked their questions in interrogations. So what we did was basically mimicked really common police interrogation tactics used in Canada and elsewhere to examine whether we could convince otherwise innocent, you know, people with no criminal background that they had committed various serious crimes.
How did you do that?
Well, we knew we had information about events that our participants had experienced when they were basically young adolescents. Various emotional events, non-criminal events. We got information from their caregivers, their parents. Things like getting into a car accident, having a serious medical procedure, those sorts of things. And then we also had information about who their best friend was, who their pet was, where they were living at the time. And we presented them with the true event and an event, the basic details of an event that we had made up. And this event that we made up was a crime that they had allegedly perpetrated, according to their parents, which was fictitious. So something like when you were 13 years of age, you assaulted another a peer of yours with a weapon. Now tell us what you can remember about that. And so we started off with a true event to gain credibility, and then we offered this false event. And over the course of three hour-long interviews over a period of 2 weeks, we came to persuade a huge number of people that they had committed this crime, to the extent that they were reporting extensive detail about getting arrested, what had happened, going to jail, their parents picking them up eventually, and to the point that they experienced significant guilt for these wrongdoings that, in fact, they hadn't committed.
And your participants were actually students, right?
They were undergraduate students, and wow. we had ensured, according to their caregivers, that they had no criminal record, that they had never, to the knowledge of their parents, ever committed a crime. That was sort of a screen-in. And so they were otherwise very pro-social, nice people who, you know, over the course of 3 hours, using the same kind of tactics that police use, came to believe and endorse that they had engaged in this kind of criminal behavior, which ranged from assaults to assaults with a weapon to serious thefts, and providing extremely rich accounts of what happened.
So what is it about these police-style tactics that would lead these students to make these sorts of admissions?
Well, we know that memory is really malleable. There's been numerous studies showing that we can mess with people's memories using things like leading questions and things like guided imagery and hypnosis and so on. We can actually convince people of any number of types of events that never actually occurred. And we were wondering whether this could extend to committing criminal acts. And so we used tactics that are very, very common in the Canadian interrogation room. For example, offering what police call incontrovertible evidence. We know you did it. So in this case, we said, you know, your parents had informed us that you did this crime and you were arrested. In real life, police will say we have you failed a polygraph, or we have this kind of evidence or that kind of evidence. Sometimes it's real, and sometimes it's actually made up. It's falsified. I think a lot of the Canadian public aren't aware that police are very, very can lie to suspects at a very, very high extent. So we also used a technique in which we told people, this is totally normal that you don't remember this traumatic event, and we have various techniques that we can help you recover this event. It's kind of falsely telling people how memory works. Police often use that. We had repeated recalls. We used guided imagery and relaxation. So just take your time, close your eyes, imagine what it might have been like, that sort of thing. And we use extremely leading questions. All of this stuff we see very commonly in police interrogations, and it led to a frightening number of people, approximately 70%.
Wow.
That came to recall and confess to this event. And we suspect that if we added more interviews, we kept going, we might have gotten closer to 100%. So, in other words, we think it's a completely normal aspect of human memory that we are so vulnerable to these tactics.
So do you believe that you can then make the leap that those people who are making confessions, at least some of them, maybe a large portion of them, are believing things that didn't actually happen? I mean, do you believe then that a lot of confessions are in fact false?
In my mind, there's no doubt that some proportion of those cases that I mentioned are the result of misremembering having done a crime. And, of course, these are cases in which, you know, DNA turns out to exonerate the individual. This, you know, ignores the thousands and thousands of people in prison who aren't so exonerated, who may be sitting in there believing they committed a crime that they never did. So that's a very select sample. So we have no idea what the extent of this might be.
What needs to change then? Is there a dramatic shift that needs to happen?
Well, I think, thankfully, the shift is already happening. There's an increasing recognition, largely as a result of scientific research, that these techniques can mess with people's memories, not only defendants or suspects, but also witnesses. We're seeing some changes in Canadian policing. For example, Newfoundland Constabulary and Vancouver Police Department, and to some extent the RCMP, although it seems to be happening much more slower, are moving toward less psychologically coercive, less deceptive, less manipulative interview tactics. So hopefully this is going to continue. I mean, you know, if we're able to that easily implant memories for crime in a non-criminal sample that we know is a non-criminal sample, then imagine being subjected to very, very lengthy police interrogations where you're under intense stress, intense anxiety, and perhaps confusion. So we think that this is probably represents a significant problem that we need to be addressing.
Okay, interesting stuff. Stephen Porter, thank you very much for this.
Thanks a bunch.